At Angelus the following day, Dietrich approached him as he packed his goods away for the night.
"You have something I fix?"
the man asked. "You are far from home," Dietrich suggested. That elicited a cheerful shrug.
"Man stay home, man no peddler,"
the other replied.
"Only sopron shopkeeper. Sell to neighbors, what profit? What I make, they make. Here, when you see these things like I bring..."
He dipped into a coffer and emerged with a white pallium, done up in fishes and crosses and edged in bright colors of red and blue.
"When see a scarf so fine?"
Dietrich pretended to study the material. "You'd fetch a better price for it in Vienna or Munich than in a little hill dorp." The man licked his lips and glanced to the side. He tugged on his mustache.
"City guilds no like the peddlers, but here, how often one see?"
"More often than you may think, friend Imre. Freiburg is no great trek." He did not mention that tales of demons had kept such traffic at bay of late. That Imre might spy an incautious crank was a chance to which Dietrich had resigned himself. "Now, if you would return to me Volkmar's brooch, I will give you a word of advice. Substitutions of base metal are too bald for so small a village, where each man knows his few gods with greater intimacy than do your city folk." Imre grinned and dug into his scrip, retrieving the ornament. Dietrich checked the clasp on the back and saw that it had been repaired with considerable skill. "A man of your craft need not resort to such petty theft." He handed over the tin piece that the peddler had substituted. "If you are once marked a thief, who will trade with you?" Imre dropped the false brooch into his scrip with a careless shrug.
"Men of skill must also eat.
Think Vogt want me sell for him brooch in Freiburg. Fool wife, keep money." "You would be advised to leave," Dietrich told him. "Volkmar will talk to the others." Again the man shrugged.
"Peddler come, peddler go. Otherwise, no peddler. But do not go to Strasbourg or to Basel. The pest has appeared there."
"Oh-ho!" The Magyar looked east toward Bear Valley.
"So, then I no go these places."
The peddler returned to Oberhochwald 3 days later, although Dietrich did not learn of it until afternoon. Manfred himself, riding at exercise with Eugen and one of the castle knights, came upon him on the track from Niederhochwald. Imre declared that he had private words for the hare, and Manfred led him a little to the side. Eugen sat his horse close by, and on hearing the hare gasp and thinking him treacherously struck, rendered the peddler senseless with the flat of his sword. This proved an injustice, as Manfred related to a council hastily called afterward in the great hall.
"The pest has come into the Breisgau," he announced without preamble.
22. June 1349. Until Nonis, the Seven Holy Brothers. "The pest is stalking us," Dietrich thought. It had crept incrementally closer from Bern to Basel to Strasbourg, turning now to Freiburg. Would it come next into the mountains? It had crossed the Alps, so climbing the Katharinenberg would be no great feat.
"This Imre had reached the glade at Churchgarden," Manfred continued, "when he encountered a party of Freiburgers riding at the canter toward the gorge. There were a dozen, all told, a merchant by his surcoat, his lady, maids and servants in livery, and a few others. They would have trampled our peddler down had he not pulled his mules aside in haste. A bag fell from their pack horse as they passed, and the merchant ordered a servant to re-harness the load, even as he and the others pressed on. The servant worked in terrible haste, spilling clothes and other goods, and gathering them up again in clumsy fingers. Imre helped him re-secure it."
"More likely he yanked it loose as it passed," said Klaus, and the others tittered nervously. Manfred did not smile.
"That was when the servant told him of the pest, and that hundreds were each day dying in Freiburg."
"Did he verify the servant's tale, mein Herr?" Everard insisted. "Perhaps the man exaggerated. Servants are notorious liars."
Manfred spared him a curious glance.
"Imre reasoned that if a man as educated as a guild merchant deemed it wise to flee east, he would be a great fool himself to continue west." The servant with the pack horse quickly outdistanced Imre's mules, yet Imre came upon his load shortly after, scattered along the trail up the gorge. He supposed that the roughness of the trail had caused the pack to come loose again, and lacking his master's voice in his ear, the servant had this time abandoned all and fled. Imre thought the clothing too fine to lie deserted, so he gathered them into his own pack. Klaus said, "I missed out. He helped tie the man's bundle with that very end in view." He spoke too quickly and too sharply, and rubbed one hand with the other as he looked at each counselor in turn. "A little further on," Manfred continued grimly, "he came upon the body of the merchant's lady, lying as she had fallen from her horse. Her face was deep blue and distended in agony, and she had vomited black bile over herself, beside which her neck was broken in the fall." Klaus had no quip this time. Everard had gone pale. Young Eugen caught his lip between his teeth. Baron Grosswald did not move. Dietrich crossed himself and prayed God's mercy for the unknown woman. "And her husband stopped not to aid her?" he asked.
"Nor the servant. Imre says that in pity he placed over her form a blanket from the abandoned bundle, daring naught else. But," and Manfred slumped a little in his high seat, "I have not said all. The peddler confessed that he had come west in flight. The pest was in Vienna already in May, and in Munich this month. But he kept silence for fear we would expel him."
At that there were many exclamations. Everard cursed the peddler. Klaus exclaimed that Munich was, after all, many leagues distant, and the malady might travel north into Saxony rather than west into Swabia. Eugen worried that the pest was surrounding them east and west. Dietrich wondered about the Jews, who had set off in that direction with the Duke's escort.
Baron Grosswald, silent until now, spoke up.
"Illness stems from countless creatures too small for thought and born in divers ways, by touch, on the breath, in the shit or piss, in the spit, or even on the breeze. It matters not which way the roads wind."
"Such foolishness!" Eugen cried.
"Not so," said Dietrich, who had heard already this thesis from Hans as well as from the crankish physician. "Marcus Varro once proposed that very thing in De Re Rustica."
"Which is very interesting, Pastor," said Klaus in a high, tight voice, "but this pest is not like other afflictions, and so may not spread like those of the monsters."
To Geschert,
"Can you swear that what you say of your small lives is true of us? I've heard your folk remark more than once on our differences."
Geschert tossed his arm. "What may be, but what is, must be. I have other concerns than this malodor of yours. You may live or you may die, however you may deny it, as the luck of the small lives have it. As for us, we may only die." The affectless tones of the talking head endowed his pronouncement with a fatal chill. Dietrich wanted to tell the monster that his reasoning had failed, had asserted the consequent. What must be, is, but what is, need not be, but can through the grace of God be changed. But Manfred struck the table with the pommel of his dagger. Dietrich marked how white the knuckles were that held it.
"Could your physician not mix for us a medicine?" the hare asked. "If the pest is natural, then the treatment must be natural, and we have no theriac in the village."
But Geschert shook his head in the human fashion. "No. Our bodies, and yours, I suppose, have naturally many small lives within, with whom we live in balance. An anti-life compound must take careful aim so that only the invader is slain. Your bodies are too strange to us, and we would not know friend from foe among your small lives, even did our physician know the art. Subtle skills are called for in fashioning a compound to hunt and destroy an invading small life, to create a new one from whole cloth, and for creatures whose bodies she does not know is beyond her." Silence fell. And Manfred sat still for a time while the others watched. Then he pressed both palms to the table and pushed himself to his feet, and all eyes but Geschert's turned to him.
"This is what we shall do," Manfred announced. "Everyone knows it is death to have contact with the sick, so we must cut ourselves off
and have nothing to do with the outside. No one may use the road through the village. Any who come hither from Freiburg or elsewhere must pass around through the fields. Anyone trying to enter the village will be turned away, by force of arms, if need be.